Are we going sugar milk before the last before the last question?
I want to try the sugar milk. Maybe you should top it off because it might.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I got
a little bit warm.
I got plenty.
Mine got a little bit warm. You don't want warm milk? You're not a kitty cat?
I went to Vintage just before coming here because...
Let's talk about your serving vessel, too, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Straight out of the kitchen.
Like a pickle.
It's real back-of-house vibes. It's like, for those who don't know this, like, if you don't know people who work in restaurants, we drink everything out of deli quarts.
Yeah.
Like, the only way I can measure volume is in deli quarts.
I'm a little scared.
The cooks will truly hate
this. In a good
this.
Way to try this.
Every Cheers. Time, Cheers, every boys. Time Cheers. A new person tastes sugar milk, they just hate it so much. So thank you for
so
indulging
me. So this doesn't
me.
Have coffee in it?
No, it does. Oh, that's okay. The whole thing. That's the whole thing.
I don't hate it.
No, I know. It's just like a simple... Yeah. It's like what a baby would choose if they were addicted to caffeine, which is like my palate, basically.
That's a great way to phrase that. So how much sugar is in sugar milk?
5% by weight.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess 6% in this one.
Yeah. So,
that's really good.
It is really
Thank
good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Marco, Chloe, Alex.
It tastes like a sweet
All of you guys,
latte,
they said it's very
basically.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's It's like yeah. Cafe Au Lait, like in Japan, the little vending machines. That's what this is modeled off of.
It reminds
I
me
Cafe
of a colder, like a colder Cuban coffee.
So those of you who do not know, they do have vending machines in Japan.
Fucking
that
everywhere.
Are just out on the street, and you can get the sugar milk in a can. That is either hot or cold from the vending machine.
Yeah, which is wild.
You can go hot or cold?
Yeah, they have hot vending machines. Cold.
Wait, hot can?
Hot yeah. can. And they are amazing okay, hold on, when wait. It's cold outside.
As in like room temperature?
Out. No, no, no. As in hot, hot.
Warm.
Like, how do they like, do that?
The whole vending machine, it's just like air conditioning or the cooling.
Yeah.
Half they, of it's they, heated, they half heat, of it's... Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it's great because on like a... I remember walking down the street, coming up to one of these vending machines, and it's 12 degrees outside. You buy the can of hot coffee, and you
warm yourself
you,
up.
You oh, warm yourself
yeah.
up.
Yeah, that thing comes out of there at 130F. It's like, oh, grabbing it. Just
and then it's a liquid that's so sweet.
Yes.
It'll make your head spin.
Mm. Yes.
It's actually sweeter than this.
Oh, yeah, by a lot. I mean, I'm pretty sure... I don't want to call this the healthiest drink that anyone would like, but it's actually not
it's
that
not.
Unhealthy. It's just milk with some sugar and instant coffee in it.
Yeah. All right, I'll ask my last question as you're continuing to drink, and then you can ask the last question.
I will keep drinking.
Do it. So I asked you earlier, like if you thought Tulsa's palate had changed since you started, not just you, but since some places have started rolling out unique flavors and stuff, because I think most people view Oklahoma as steak and potatoes, and you know, Tulsa and Oklahoma City in particular are not that. There's a lot of good ethnic food and just different food in those cities. I'm curious where you see the food scene going in Oklahoma, and do you think it's something that will attract? I know Tulsa does the whole work remote thing, and people are coming in from around the country. The cost of living is great here, but do you think at some point it will be, the cost of living's great, you know, I did the work remote thing, but then also the food scene there is incredible. Like, do you see it being something that will put Tulsa on the map just by itself, the food scene?
That's a good question. So, I mean, I don't know whether this is an optimistic or just realistic view about how, like, markets change.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty suspect of people who are like, you know, we tried this really ambitious thing and Tulsa just isn't ready. I think I equate that to teachers who are like, yeah, I taught it so well, but my students just didn't get it. It's like,
well, then you
didn't teach it well. So if your students don't understand, you didn't teach it well. So like, I mean, admittedly, compared to like San Francisco, Tulsa does not have as progressive of a food market.
Correct.
But I guess I don't see that as like, the way I see that changing is people who say, okay, so I'm not just going to like transplant San Francisco concept exactly as it is, or New York concept exactly as it is, because like part of the work that needs to be done is a mixture of, you have to make great food, first of all, like every time. It's a little maybe even unfair, I would say, that like restaurants, the expectation is you're hitting every single time. Like if you're a teacher, you don't absolutely kill it every single lesson. Like you have tutoring, you have whatever. There's no reconciliation session when someone has a bad meal. You're like, you know, this, we missed this thing. It's like they just come in, and if it's bad, they're like, I hate it. Anyway, so that's one thing is you just have to get the food right. But then the other things are like the storytelling and the relationship building. A, I think that's a beautiful vision of the future that like I've only just met you within the last year. Mm-hmm. But to say like, so here's my food. But instead of saying it's a fried chicken rice bowl, to say like, well, these are all the things that are in it. But also this is why it's important. This is how people typically eat it. This is why it's a lovable dish that deserves a place like in this broader multicultural sort of context. So like,
it's almost more about teaching.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
That's interesting.
So I actually think that like food overall is like, food overall, I see it as the challenge is not like, can people cook well? Because like Hidalguense, this restaurant called Hidalguense out at 11th and Mingo, like they have some of the best food you can buy with money in Tulsa.
You're going to have to text me the name of that restaurant.
I absolutely will. But I had never heard of
11th and Mingo.
11th and Mingo is called Hidalguense. I like just tasted it this last year and I was like blown away. And the thing that's like hard about that is realizing that like they are cooking food better. And this is like no offense to like most restaurants around where I live, but like they are blowing people out of the water. But the issue is if the only people you serve are the people who already know that food, from everyone else's perspective, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like from all of our perspective, it's like, oh, Tulsa's food scene just doesn't have any really good barbacoa. Like, I wish I could live in Philly and eat South Philly barbacoa. It's like, you do realize we do already have that. Yeah. But me as a chef who's obsessed with food, I only just found this like a month ago or 2 months ago. I've lived here since 2013. So I think like that aspect of thinking about part of your job as a chef who like wants to be a part of the future or like wants a better future is to not just say like, I'll cook good food. And if people don't like it, then Tulsa sucks. Like, people didn't show up, blah, blah, like all these ways of just making excuses for like people just not knowing like what you're doing. I think if you find like right now, I feel really lucky to be a part of a group like, so basically the Kitchen of Vintage, like our team of eight, I would say we're like very committed to that project of like, sort of explaining and teaching and welcoming people into what we really think is like hopefully a good inclusive future for food. I feel lucky to be a part of that group because I do think if you have enough people doing that, then there's no way not to. Like everyone likes to feel welcomed. Everyone likes to eat delicious food. Everyone likes to learn new things about new cultures. So I think if you find a group of people who say, my job is not just to make good food, my goal is not just to make money off of like rich people who want to spend money, but really like I want to build just the whole thing, the stories, the community, the food, then like it is for me sort of whoever does that first. Or not whoever does that first. But you know what I'm saying? Like if you find a community of people who do that, there's no way that that doesn't happen in the community where like cool things pop up, like new, interesting things that feel really good. So yeah, I mean, because I have dedicated my life to it, I feel confident that it'll happen because I believe in myself 100%, basically.
I love that answer.
That I kind of went into dreamy world right there. That was a really great answer.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Man, you brought up a really great point of just being curious is sometimes a great way to learn what your city is actually doing because, you know, I didn't know about that place on 11th Mingo. And you're going to have to say that name, and it's a barbacoa place?
It's a barbacoa place. You got the lamb barbacoa?
I need to know. And so, but I'm also, I'm foodie by heart. I make alcohol for a living. And I have never heard of that place. And I think that that's, you know, I think our city needs to learn how to communicate what is actually going around. Because I think that there's a lot of people out there that would be interested in barbacoa, just like myself.
Yeah.
And like me sitting here with you, I didn't know that you were making Japanese breakfast once a month.
Yeah.
Where if I would have known that, I probably would have showed up a year ago.
Yeah.
So I don't have the answer. This is a question for everyone out there. I wonder how a city can actually learn because these companies can't, you know, spend egregious amounts of money for advertising.
Well, hopefully that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
just listen every week.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks for those tips.
Yeah, absolutely. You got your last question?
I have my
Did you memorize
question.
It?
I didn't memorize okay. it.
But
no,
before we
of
do
course
it, we have one more.
You know me.
I know. I'm kidding.
I'm a brewer. I look at recipes. I don't memorize.
How many brewing recipes have you memorized?
I make the Kolsch more than anything else. Mm-hmm. I think I have the recipe. I know I have the recipe memorized, but that's the only one.
Colin, that's a great question for a chef too. How many times do you have to go back to your notes or to wherever you got a recipe from, or how many times is it just something that, because I play around in the kitchen a lot and then mm-hmm. I fuck myself because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, how did I do that? Like, what was my ratios of this? I don't
you
even
gotta
remember.
Make notes.
Yeah, I don't. And so it's like, I got to try to recreate that.
That is a good question. Most of the time, it's a recipe that I've memorized, like most of the, almost
out of,
all the
out of habit or just out of times you've done it?
Both.
Okay.
I would say it used to be a really unhealthy thing because I was like, I felt like I was starting late in food, but I would say I was very dedicated to being a good professional. And I was like, if I can just study recipes at home, and that means that when I show up at the restaurant, I have it all, you know, all the way down, I'm just going to do that. Yeah, I've had some kind of crazy relationships with work in the past. But usually it's memorized. The only time I would cook by feel is during research cooking or at home.
Okay.
In a restaurant setting, I think that's a mark of like a bad professional to cook by feel because it's totally unsustainable.
Well, and right. yeah, you're all over the map on consistency of what you're throwing
yeah.
out.
Yeah, if you work with other people, the one exception would be if you work alone, if you're the only chef, like you're the only person who ever cooks and you're committed to being there every day, go ahead and just cook by feel. But if you have a kitchen of two or more people, I think it's totally unprofessional.
That's a valid
point. I feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, what are we drinking now? The last
one.
All right,
so we are drinking Mrs. Stout. We're drinking Mrs. Stoutfire.
You learned. Good
I did learn. You have to be right up on the microphone. So I asked everybody of our first recording uh-huh. of what I should do and how the podcast sound, and everyone said, lean into the mic.
It's a key.
I'm learning.
It's a key.
It is an Imperial Stout that we made last year in February that we make with Arbol chilies, and it is 18%.
Holy
so,
shit, 18%?
18%, right. You heard that right.
Let's go.
Amazingly enough, I chose a new yeast strain for this round of Mrs. Stoutfire to test it out. The recipe changes every year, even though that I do write down my recipe. So that I can repeat it.
Was that a shot at me?
No.
was that a dig?
I did make eye contact too much there, I think.
You did. It was right at me.
So if anybody out there is listening, my original gravity of this beer was the exact same as the year before, and we only had 14% come out the year before, but this new yeast strain actually ate the last, it ate all the way down to only like 1.5% sugar.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
Whereas
so it's like dry, but really
it's
alcoholic.
A very, very dry beer technically with a lot of sweetness still there. And so the year previous, there was about 9.5% sugar still left in it. And this year's, there was only 1.5. So there's a lot more alcohol involved. It's a lot. And actually what transpired was I used less Arbol chilies this year. And it's been in the bottle for about a year now. So there's a little less heat from the Arbol chilies. Hmm. But at the first, it came out a whole lot hotter than I was intending it for. But it was really cool.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, cheers guys.
I'm just going to live in that moment for a little
live
bit.
Live in it, man.
All right. So my last question actually ties
that's a good
into.
Beer, bud.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
It's good.
There's a lot going in on it.
You served it like room temperature, too. Was that on purpose?
Yeah. So we keep this beer in our lab at 51 degrees. So I just actually pulled it from the box and brought it here.
That's awesome.
But yeah, these kinds of beers need to be served at room temperature. So
yeah,
it just lets the aromatics kind of blossom out of the beer a lot easier.
Yeah,
So, excuse me.
happens when you drink.
Yeah.
You're good.
So my last question really ties into what we were just talking about. My last question is, how have you seen, what has your experience been, and you've answered this kind of within this conversation, but your experience personally as a creative in Tulsa, and how do you think your efforts have influenced those in our community about their thought process on food?
So I would say one of the, so it's a part of our mission, like within this sort of group that we've made, which also it's really cool. Like we came together just since the beginning of the pandemic. Like it's a very new project, I would say overall, but we're like very committed to each other. I think one of the things that is like somewhat unique about us in this city, or at least that we're like sort of uniquely committed to, is like, we want to tell our real stories. And I'm typically very skeptical. Well, I'm very skeptical of people in the food industry. It's like most of the time you're just like trying to make money, you know? But I would say like, we're very committed to like telling our real story.
Thanks, bud.
So like, I know that it's easier to make money making sushi or basically like raw fish and saying this is Japanese food. That's an easier way to make money than making like cold summer noodles. Like no one knows what that is. Like when you serve little noodles,
so good.
Yeah, when you serve noodles with ice cubes in it, like I had, and actually it was a very adorable thing. I guess will not, if this person hears this, they will know it was them. But someone, we made these summer noodles that have ice cubes, and John tasted this. It's all these summery, crispy vegetables and ingredients, and it has ice cubes in it because the goal is it's supposed to be really cold. You eat it during summer. And this one couple who are very sweet and nice supporters were like, oh, so what is this? Is this like a gel or like a whatever? And I was like, oh, that's frozen water. That's
artisan
ice. Yeah. Like they were like, oh, this must be some cool, like transparent little whatever.
But I
was like,
to be
that's
fair,
ice.
You did carbonate watermelon.
I did carbonate watermelon.
So to think that you would do something weird with ice is not too far out of the realm of possibility.
Yes.
And by the way, the dish that you're talking about, ice cold summer noodles, is my number one dish that I miss.
Oh my God. Well, either
I want that so bad.
I will make it happen. We'll have to wait till it's summer again. But next summer, absolutely, I will make that.
I'll eat it in the winter.
Put snow in there.
All right, you're in there. So the answer to the broader question is like, I know that some of the things we do are not the shortest path to like sustaining ourselves, like making a living. Like it's an overall problem that people in the restaurant industry, especially like cooks, like back of house, like don't make enough money to like live a stable life. At the same time that we're like trying to address the problem, like actually a big part of our mission is around like money. Equity, transparency, fairness, accountability around money within the sort of group that we have. But the sort of broader point is like, we're very committed to telling our own stories, even if they don't fit that well with what people think they want. Mm. Like you think you want sushi, but that's because at some point someone was like, man, American people can understand sushi. Just go for it. And that's how people make money. And it's nothing against those people at all, because like people need to make a living. But I would say the biggest thing for us is like wanting to sort of bring people into like what we actually believe is beautiful about food and drink and connecting with people. Even this idea that like, I don't think like for the most part, I really don't think that you should go out and be able to buy food for like less than $10, like at a restaurant. Because in order to do that, you like kind of had to exploit someone. Mm. I like the idea that like part of the vision behind like this cooking course or teaching me how to cook is like, if you know how to cook at home and you're not depending on like shitty restaurants to feed you for $4 a meal, then you eat for really cheap almost every day of the week. And when you go out, it's like go off, like drink great wine, drink cool cocktails, drink cool food. Like instead of it being like $20 every meal for takeout, it's like spend $3 a meal for every meal except for one, and then go out and like really ball out, like spend $100 on a meal. So I think like,
I love that.
Overall trying to make that space where it's like, I guess acknowledging that like cooking, not just for me, but I think for a lot of like creatives within the food space, it's like something deeply personal, and you kind of lose something if you just make it into the most popular product you can. You have to like toss out all these parts of yourself. And if you just say, no, I'll just tell the truth as well as I can, but I'll supplement it with like the storytelling and talking to people and making relationships, that I think there, I do think that that space exists where people thought maybe it was impossible before to like do your real shit and have people really understand it and appreciate it. I actually think we're at a place where that is possible, you know, where people can really, you can make enough money to sustain yourself, but also like tell your truth at the same time.
I love that. I've, you know, at Cabin Boys really have tried my best at to support my production team who actually makes our product and doing my best and to pay them what they're actually worth when, you know, that means that my company's not necessarily making as much money as it could. But that's really, really important. And I had a conversation with someone that wanted to be a brewer, and I said, okay, so what, one of my first questions was, okay, if you think that you're going to be a creative and work really hard to do this, the first question is, are you ready to create something that someone is worth paying more for and going to put into their body and consume? And that is a really interesting question and inquisitive to ask yourself when you are a creative and making something that is worth someone's dollars to actually invest in yourself and in you.
Yeah,
that's making it.
Absolutely.
I now see how Joe Rogan podcast can go like 3.5 hours long, because I could just sit here. There's like more questions I could just keep asking, but I'm not going to do that to you. I'm going to let you go.
It's a big old rabbit hole.
Yeah, right. But before we leave, once again, the website for your cooking class, when they need to sign up by, and when they can find you at Vintage.
Absolutely. So
promote yourself.
HowToActuallyCook.com. This is our first session. Signups close on the 15th, or whenever, I think 16 will be the cap. It's like a live class, so like, I'll be there, and there's weekly check-ins and everything. It's really like, I'll make you into a person who actually knows how to cook. That's the whole point. So like, it can't be an infinitely large class.
You heard it here, folks.
Yeah. HowToActuallyCook.com. The 15th sign-ups will close, and then the 22nd is our first class. It's Fridays in the evening is like our time to talk about ideas, and then Mondays in the evening is our time to like cook together and see those ideas. You get a bunch of gear, a knife, a couple books, a fermentation chamber. And then every week there's just like a focus on a different topic. And then, yeah, if you want to try our food, the easiest thing, we do most of our like marketing or putting our message out on Instagram. So Kitchen at Vintage is the name of the handle. And then all of us are sort of a part of that. Yeah. Me, Marco, Alex, Bradley, Julia, Chloe, Noah. Oh my God. Sarah. Got it.
Okay. There you
I was
go.
Like,
good
oh
job,
God,
boss.
Don't.
Good job, boss.
Sarah just joined us. I was like, don't stop on the seventh person. But yeah, those awesome, are sort man. Of our projects. Yeah.
Well, cheers and thanks for coming in. And
absolutely.
I hope we asked some good questions. I feel like it was a good conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good.
Really. Man, thank you guys for having us.
Yeah. Cheers. Cheers. And trust me, go eat Collins food.
Yes.
I certainly will.
Yes.
Now. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. This is The Tasting Room.
Are you going to toss a break or am I going to toss a break?
You toss it.
All right. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us. And that is the talk with Colin and the consumption of my first consumption of sugar milk.
And it was a great consumption.
It was. It was a great conversation and great consumption.
And just a fun conversation to have with him and really get to know someone who is extremely creative within our community.
And I really do encourage you. I'm going to take his class. I encourage you to take his class if you're interested at all in cooking or learning how to cook. Or if you're like me and just want to know more
I guess, solidify the building blocks that you already think you know about how to cook.
And I think that I will probably be encouraged by my wife to go cook right, or learn in his class, because it is not just for intermediate but beginners as well, such as myself, because I'm scared of the kitchen, but also could help my wife cook and actually bring something to the table.
Boy, you're going to have... It's going to be great. You're just going to surprise her after you take this class with meals galore.
She's going to wonder why have you been gone on a Friday night or whenever it was.
What's happening?
And then I'll be like, bam,
eat my food. Yeah, it's great. No, but that was a fantastic stuff. Do you want to clue our viewers in into who's, and listeners, into who's joining us for episode 2, technically?
Yeah, so we're fortunate enough to have Elliot Nelson,
the man, the myth, the legend,
runner of the McNelly's Group, and it's going to be a wonderful conversation with him.
Yeah,
because he is someone who has truly influenced what downtown Tulsa looks like.
It's not hyperbole to say he is the reason downtown Tulsa is what it is.
It's without an understatement. Yeah,
yeah.
The downtown Tulsa wouldn't necessarily have a face without his efforts and his visionary mindset of what Tulsa could be.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see what he brings to the tasting room from a either food or beverage standpoint.
Yeah.
Very curious. I love that Colin didn't bring food as a chef, by the way.
Yeah, that was I loved that.
Yeah. He told me, he's like, I was going to bring a nice wine, but then I was like, anyone that knows me knows I drink sugar milk. He was like, so that's just what I'm going to bring in the deli court. Like, it was just fantastic.
That's so great. Yeah, we'll bring the bourbon and beer, and I have encouraged Elliot, and we'll see if he actually brings something to his personality and what has influenced himself.
So that'll be about a week or so from now. We'll have, I'm going to call him Sir Elliot Nelson. I'm going to knight him. Tulsa.
He needs to be knighted. Yes. Tulsa.
He is the knight of Tulsa.
Yes.
So we will call him Sir Elliot Nelson. That is next week on the Tasting Room. Good show, buddy.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you guys next week.
Right on.